The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. It is Thursday, June 3rd, and we've got a special episode today. We're joined for a really nice, long, meaty interview. And I'm not just saying that because of our
pause
structures. A nice, big, I gotta start it. That's
big, beef interview. No, we're keeping this one. Keep going.
We're joined by Dan Levitard, the man, the myth, the legend, guy all three of us are fans of. As always, Jenkins and Jones is hosted by my good friends, LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubbas?
Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And I'm Cardi B, a.k.a. Mike, a.k.a. Dan Levitard. we had Dan this morning. He's doing if you go to YouTube and search Levitard and Friends, he's doing a 24-hour live stream called Free Dumb with everyone basically that you've ever seen on any of Levitard shows. It's going to be a blast. 24-hour live stream tomorrow, so go check that out for sure. He came on to promo that. We didn't know how much time we're going to get with him. And we ended up with a really long, meaty interview, John.
I'm a child.
So this is coming out as a special episode. We will be breaking down more NBA playoffs on our next episode, which will be out on Monday next week. But we can run through the highlights. We're sad about the Lakers. We're happy about the Mavs Clippers.
The Celtics are funny as fuck.
The Celtics are hilarious.
About a leprechaun, and they done fucking imploded.
Don't take Bron for granted. Let's just enjoy every second.
That too. Luka's a bad motherfucker.
Luka's a cold motherfucker, man. Cold.
I do. I need Tyler to talk about Lucky the Leprechaun for 30 fucking seconds. Like,
I'll give you 30 seconds here. Okay, well, for one, I'm not going to be disingenuous or naive here and act like I don't get people upset about a logo being stepped on. I understand how much that means to people. But the shit that makes this shit funny is it's a fucking leprechaun. We got grown-ass men threatening violence over a fucking leprechaun named Lucky with that little weak-ass wink he got going on. This motherfucking Kyrie stepped on a damn logo that gets stepped on a million times per game, and these motherfuckers want to see him in the streets for disrespecting a leprechaun. Y'all are fucking clowns. The end.
Is that their second? Millionaires are threatening
violence. Risk it all over a leprechaun.
I do think the fact that the leprechaun is named Lucky adds an element as well.
That's funny. You fuck with Lucky, you fucking with me. Motherfucker. What?
I will die for Lucky the leprechaun.
I'll fucking die for Lucky off this bitch. Yeah.
Fuck fine. Lucky.
Fuck. Yeah, let's be clear on that. Fuck Lucky.
You know those hot takes you post on social media? Well, now you can win up to $5,000 when you put those takes to the test on FanDuel. It's a new game called Over Under, and it's absolutely free to play on FanDuel. Here's how it works. FanDuel will set lines on things like total points or three-pointers made during every NBA on TNT broadcast. All you have to do is pick over or under for every prop. Your picks could win you a share of $5,000 during every contest. FanDuel is the exclusive home for over-under, and it's available in all 50 states, so you can play from anywhere. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/over-under and sign up now if you haven't done so already. Just create a new FanDuel account. If you don't already have one, it takes less than 2 minutes to sign up. Then put your takes to the test during every NBA on TNT broadcast at FanDuel.com/over-under. It could be worth up to $5,000. Age and local restrictions apply. See FanDuel.com for terms and conditions. So, you're a sports fan. That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can see the latest picks and articles from Action Network gambling experts, as well as personalities like Colin Cowherd. You can compare odds from different sports books and track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter. All right, we're joined by our special guest for the day, Dan Le Batard, the man, the myth, the legend, the guy that we all admire and have really enjoyed over the years. Dan is going to be doing a 24-hour stream with, I've never seen, it was a festival lineup of live stream guests that was put out yesterday. It's going to be available on the Le Batard and Friends YouTube. You need to go subscribe to the Le Batard and Friends YouTube to watch it. Noon Friday to noon Saturday Eastern. They're streaming 24 hours live for their big freedom event. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to see you guys have a platform, an earned platform, now that the content space is a little more of a meritocracy where people can see who's good and there's not like a line to get into mainstream media. It's good to see that you guys have a platform where you can do your funny shit unencumbered.
For sure, for sure. Well, Dan, first off, thank you very much for that. It means a lot. But building on what you said, you know, I think we all knew your time at ESPN was coming to an end. Like with your radio show was kind of unsaid, but it wasn't unacknowledged, if you know what I mean. Like it wasn't an elephant in the room at all during your last few months at ESPN. It was more like the last week of senior year in high school. You feel me? Like that was the vibe. It was like the entire show was like, do I really need to do this worksheet my English teacher gave us for homework? I'm out this bitch next week. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not at all saying you guys mailed it in. Not saying that. You guys just lean all the way into saying, fuck, sticking to the script, which was always when the show and you and your guys were at your best. And if you don't get that, you don't get the show. So I'm kind of saying all that to say this, like, you know, like what you said about how the creator space is becoming more of a meritocracy. And, you know, we kind of had that anonymous GM, Danny Ainge, we all know it was you motherfucker, who said that the player empowerment era was like the worst thing to happen to sports. But to draw that parallel, we're kind of in the era of like creator empowerment in the media world, like you said, where everyone has a voice and an opportunity to amplify that now due to social media, podcast networks, whatever. And we came up in an era where those opportunities just weren't there. Like you had to be a sports talk guy or gal. You know, if you wanted to be a sports talk guy, you had to hop up, you know, on your local radio station or try to be a newspaper person. And getting called up to ESPN was like getting called up to the big leagues, you know, and you kind of went all those routes. So how do you feel about this like creator empowered era? Because, you know, unlike Danny, you're not crying about it. You're not a dinosaur screaming at the asteroid. You're you know, leaning into it.
But I do see where mainstream media would be threatened by it being made a meritocracy. I do understand why mainstream media is like, well, wait a minute. So kids today are saying they want to be YouTubers and vloggers instead of astronauts and firefighters. And they're doing that because there's a shortcut to the fame. Mm-hmm. And so I understand the mainstream media looking at that and saying, wait a minute, you got to earn your fame. You got to get in there and do articles. You got to get in there and be knighted by some legacy media. But we at ESPN tried to give you guys permission while we were at ESPN. It's why some of the smartest people at the company gravitated toward us, because we wanted to give permission to different. And now we're trying to do it again by saying, you know what? We don't need mainstream media. Like, we're trying to give guys like you, women like you, minorities all over the place permission to understand that we are the media legacy company right now. We are not getting, we did not want to put our fans behind a paywall. We did not want to do it with the needs and wants of a mainstream media company. We did that at ESPN. They supported us in a way that made us a very big thing. But now, very much, it's like, fuck it, we'll do it ourselves. We will do this ourselves. And you guys are saying, you know what, give me a couple of microphones and I will fight everybody in a competition battle for who can be better at these microphones. Let the audience decide. Let the audience decide if they want a mainstream media member or if they want somebody else who's doing it a different way. And so it's scary as I get old. Like I see these comedians, these older comedians fighting sort of woke culture or the angry mob on social media. And the answer is be a better comedian if that scares you. So if this competition for these microphones scares you, be better at these microphones, because everybody's coming for these microphones, because this thing is changing like really fast.
Like this 24-hour marathon. This shit is crazy, bro.
It's fucking interesting.
It's great, but it's crazy.
It's the perfect Le Batard mad
right,
brilliant.
Right,
thing.
Right.
You
right.
know what I mean?
So what does it take for you to veto an idea? Like for you to be like, nah, this ain't it, because you tend to push a lot of boundaries with your ideas.
I don't veto. Like, our space is unplanned and no rules. This is the most planned thing we've ever been. I like counterculture. I think people appreciate the authenticity of something that bumps against the machine. Like, you just mentioned the phrase elephant in the room. Like, when I got in trouble for some of that Trump stuff at ESPN, when I came back from, you know, whatever happened publicly, my wife and I had gone and physically bought 20 Disney Dumbo elephants. Disney, the name Dumbo, the head of the Republican Party. We put it in the middle of our studio, 20 of them hanging around everywhere. The elephant in the room. And we never mentioned the elephants in the room. We never mentioned the politics. Nobody got the joke, but it was right there. It was right there. It was right there in front of everybody. Like, all ideas are welcome. Let's cause some sparks. People appreciate the authenticity. Look at what happened. It was immoral and borderline illegal. But look at what happened with Julio Jones and Shannon Sharp, if that wasn't orchestrated. We appreciated the honesty. Why? Because most of what you're getting at this microphone is fake. These athletes are just churning through it, giving you the sound. And Julio Jones is, oh, I'm out of here. Talking the way you would with your friends. And I'm guessing that if I told you guys that I'm going to drop the three of you in an incubator, a creative space, and I'm going to put you with 20 of your funniest and best creative friends, you guys would tell me 24 hours of content in a row. That ain't going to be hard for us.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to enjoy it. We're going to laugh. We're going to break rules. We're going to fall apart. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to get in trouble. And people are going to keep watching because look at this thing. It's real. It's real, because I'm not expecting it. I'm not expecting it to be 24 hours of ESPN polished television. I'm expecting us to fall apart and be able to laugh at, holy fuck, we've embarrassed ourselves.
Yeah, that's the brand right there.
We've got some very, yeah, exactly. We've got some very dumb questions for you too, but since we're talking about some fairly smart things, I'll try and lob one at you. You mentioned, like, when you were coming up, and even when we were younger, obviously, as well, it was a pretty regimented sort of tiers of media that you would sort of go up to a national publication. You mentioned now there's words like content and creative spaces and shit that none of those words existed in the same way, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. At the same time as you're saying that, the democratization of everything, that's also opened up space for so much more athlete controlled content. So much more stuff that's coming from, that's basically just really nice polished PR stuff, right? That's athletes saying exactly what you just said about the Shannon Sharp and Julio exchange. It's usually more, I'm going to put this out. This is what I want to say. How do you think that's going to go moving forward? You touched on politics. It's a problem in politics too. The more open things are, I feel like it's also harder for authentic stuff to break through the more polished PR self-generated stuff for figures, whether that's politicians or athletes or whoever. How do you think that's going to continue to play out?
It seems obvious. I think we all understand that it is too easy to get a microphone and have a show now. And one of the reasons there are so many podcasts and so many people fighting at this trough is because so many people can do it and so many people want to do it. And it's so much better than work to just screw around. And so what I would tell you there, like I would tell you for any entertainment, right? I thought the lowest moment in the history of television, I remember thinking of this, is when one of Flavor Flav's dates shit on the stairs in some reality show. And I'm like, this is the lowest moment in the history of television. Television has never been worse. And someone explained to me that, no, you have this wrong. In entertainment everywhere, the bottom 10% has always been bad. The top 10% has always been the best. And the stuff in the middle is just interchangeable. The best athletes in this space who are doing the best work, it's not going to be based on fame. It's not going to be based on you're a famous person talking. Are you doing shit that's getting noticed because you're in the top 10%? The audience will reward it, but that's how it becomes a legitimate competition. Everyone's got microphones now. Everyone can do this. All right, let's see who's the fucking best at it. Let's go. All of us are going at each other. Let's go. And the top 10%, because of that competition, the discerning audience will only be rewarded for that. Like, I'm going to go find the people who speak to me, who the laughter is contagious. It's a community. And furthermore, it's an intimate, special, different space where people exist as my friends inside my head when I'm lonely, when I'm walking my dog, when I'm doing exercise, when I'm bored because I got a shit job and I want to be doing what these guys are doing. And so make that community. It took us 30 years. It took us 30 years, but that community rides with us because we've been friends in their heads during a really lonely period. And so you find those connection points and you will rise. But you guys can be better than Deion Sanders' podcast, even though Deion Sanders is one of the most interesting athletes I've ever met, because, you know, Deion Sanders has to be saying interesting shit all the time and creating good content, and it's got to be better than yours. And some people might not think it is.
So Dan, going back to, you know, again, the points you're making about how everyone has access to a microphone now, and you know, that it's legitimately kind of a meritocracy now, where there aren't, you know, all these walls closing people off. You seem to have like cultivated a Levitard in Friends universe during your time at ESPN. Like, there was always a network of friends, you know, that you cultivated, who always hopped on Highly Questionable, always hopped on your radio show. You know, folks like Bomani, of course, who went on record saying that no one ever extended themselves to him the way that you did. You know, you got like Jamel, Katie Nolan, Mina Kimes, Gutierrez, Foxworth, et cetera, you know, and I always love that. And it always intrigued me because, you know, you really don't see that a lot, especially in the talk sports space where everyone's kind of competing to be the smartest person in the room. But you were like, hey, fuck that. Let's all be the smartest people in this room together. And I'm always intrigued by people like you who approach things this way, because it's really rare. We don't see people in your position who are like, you know, I want to amplify and help my friends make money. We see plenty of people in your position who are like, I want to make money off people. Very few are like, I want to get my people paid. So I'm just curious, you know, was that approach always the goal? Because we see it's definitely culminated in a major way with you guys having the new deal where you're just going to be creating and having fun and shooting the shit with your friends. So was this something that was always the goal, or was it something that was kind of a slow burn over the years where you were like, yo, I really like working with my friends and this is how I want to move going forward?
It's a long answer to that question, but give, I think you'll appreciate the journey. So writing is lonely. Creating is that way, is not communal. It's lonely. It's frustrating. The process isn't fun. There's great fulfillment at the end of it. That's how I started as a writer, but the path is lonely. And so what I purposely tried to create, because I tried radio by myself for a while, and I'm like, you know what? It takes too much narcissism, ego, and talent to be a voice inside my own head for 3 hours. I want this to be shared. I want this to feel communal. I want this to feel less lonely and more like laughter. So you mentioned Highly Questionable. I go do that. I'm doing it with my dad. I'm doing a family show, and I'm purposely doing the work of John Skipper, where every person who sits next to my father is going to be, because I never wanted to work there. It was never a goal of mine to arrive at some corporate destination. Everyone who sits next to my father is going to be a woman or minority. And when you say being the smartest person at the microphone, if you're going to ask me to try to be as smart as Bomani Jones at a microphone, fuck you, man. Fuck you.
Bomani's like, smart for as real. Fuck, man. God damn.
No, right? That's the best.
Fucking brilliant.
I have never seen in this industry someone better than that dude. So wait a minute. Let me help this dude, because he deserves it, because he's better at this than I am. Let me help this dude so that he has a place where I can, you know, share this with him, grift with him, not use him, you know, become friends with him and make something that is real. And so the people at ESPN who gravitated toward us, like Amin El-Hassan, for example, upon meeting Amin El-Hassan, who was like, okay, ESPN validates me. I now get to be a person who gives sports opinions on the big platform, was frustrated by, wait a minute, why do I have to come walk out onto the set and stand on this mark? Like, that's not, I want to paint outside the lines. Like, minorities are always painting outside the lines because the structure's not built for us. So let me go to a place where everyone's painting outside the lines and see if I can find a place that doesn't have to follow rules. And so it wasn't like we were seeking those people out. It's like they had a hunger for something that lived outside of Bristol, outside of ESPN, was unsupervised, was unkempt. And they're like, let me go make stuff over there. Like, that was... it was just a cool, I can't believe that a dozen places like that don't exist at a content company like ESPN. Like, to me, we shouldn't have been any kind of special. To me, we should have been petri dishes for creativity. There should have been 40 of them all over the campus.
Highly Questionable wasn't polished. You know, it was very organic. It was weird. And that's what made it special. How did you sell the suits on that? Like, these aren't regular suits. These are fucking Disney suits. You know what I mean? Like,
these are the suits that the suits wear.
Television executives are wildly unimpressive. I'm not saying this about ESPN people. I'm just saying it across the board. Very few people grow up wanting to be a television executive. Very few people know how to manufacture the stuff that makes this work. So I'd like to take some creative credit for the genius behind Highly Questionable. But the real story is this. They were under indexing with Hispanics. I'm Dan. Nobody thinks I'm Cuban. Let me do this with my father because I want a Miami show that feels like family. And my father is, you know, he's got the accent. He's doing the show in his second language and it'll be a fun thing. And Eric Rideholm, who had produced PTI, groundbreaking show. And the genius of PTI, it's the chemistry of two people who have a relationship who shout that way at each other, who are legitimate friends across every space. And he's like, let me build something around relationships. And so he came down here and was like, Dan, you got a TV show. What do you want to do with it? And I'm just staring at him and I'm like, whatever you want to do, Eric. However, like, I don't have any great idea for this. Like, let's just be weird because I'm weird and let's embrace weird. And let's aspire to our radio show is a show about a show. Let's aspire to a television show that sort of makes fun of a television show. And let's just sort of record our brainstorming meetings so that you can knock some of the veneer off of television, the stuffiness, and have it like, it was such a cheap show. Like I think it was a one camera show at one point. Like it was almost, it made to look purposely bad. So it would look different than everything around it. And it's why a lot of people don't think it's any good. A lot of people thought it was shit, okay. And didn't like my father. But for the people who do, they appreciated that part of it. That like, how does this thing exist here? Why is it here? Why is that man on television? Why? And they were talking about my father, not me. Although some of them might have been talking about me.
That's the fuck internet now.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna say. Fuck him. You got to quote unquote work with your dad, which I imagine isn't much like work. So fuck them. Yeah, I love.
Well, what you'd also like about my dad, this part has this.
We all great. Already love your dad. Yeah, so Bobby, yeah. He's our favorite fucking guy that we don't know. Yeah,
I would say as much as I'd love to take credit for the genius of things, I can't say that I had any idea that my father specifically was the strangest thing. And we saw it from the very beginning. You guys will like this story because the way my father resonated with the Black community was a really great thing for me to watch. Udonis Haslam, who I've covered his entire life in Miami, like never seen him really laugh. I walk into a studio one time, he is leaning on my father, uproariously laughing because they're just watching my father doing you know, rap videos. Like he's doing videos with the actual artists. And it's ridiculous because my father sounds ridiculous and he's laughing that way. And one of the great happy accidents about what happened with the show, and we saw it in a focus group early on, we showed them like a pilot and there were 10 people in the room and, you know, 8 of them are like, I don't like this. This is not good. And there was one young dude and he actually had grills and he was a Black dude and he had sunglasses in the focus group. And he was telling everybody in the room, look, you guys don't like something fucking different. You guys want everything to look the same. And he badgered them into better scores. He badgered them into liking my father more than they did. I really can't explain that. You guys can explain it to me. I was surprised and delighted that like when Memorial Day weekend happens down here in Miami, my father walks down Ocean Drive and it's like a homecoming king in the way that people behave around him. Like he is a bemused and befuddled star among Black people in a way that's been delightful, but confusing to me.
Yeah, he's
that's what makes your dad beautiful. You know what I mean? Like that's your dad yourself and we lean into that. You know what I mean? Like, if you know, just being real, you feel me? So I think that's what I love. You know what I mean? I never had to wonder if that was really him on TV. He got on TV and was himself. I thought that was incredible. You don't see that shit. You feel me? Everybody's
pretending. And also, I feel like Black people, we hold our elders in a very high.
That's true.
Right? Like you see all these TikTok challenges where white people are clowning their elders. When you see Black people like posting videos on shit, we are having a good laugh or you know, exalting our elders. You know what I mean? Like respecting our elders is a big part of our culture. And that's kind of why we kind of lead into loving Poppy the way we do.
I haven't had a greater professional blessing. And I've had some things that really, you know, can make me emotional, that I'm so moved with gratitude by them, than being able to spend those specific years aging with him on television post-retirement and like be able to give a guy who's a political exile, right? A guy who came to this country as an engineer, a guy who, you know, was driving a 1969 Valiant with holes in the floorboard and a dashboard that opened every time we hit a bump so that I could go to a private school, to make me an American dream so that he could sit next to me on television and like get some stardom in his second language, not knowing very much about sports. Like, I won't do better than that. Like, I'm excited. This is one of the biggest days we'll have as a show, what we're doing tomorrow on YouTube. Tomorrow, I should say, Lebatard and friends, I need you guys to subscribe to this and support the stuff that I'm talking about, because it's important for us, me and John Skipper, to empower podcasts like this one so they can grow and the meritocracy can be something that allows for more content for everybody. As big a day as that is, I don't have a greater professional blessing than being able to work with my father for 10 years. Across the worldwide leader in sports platform in a way that allowed me to share him with you and get the joy of that in adulthood, because the sitcom dad is sort of gone on television as it changes, right? Like, no, you don't see an adult son having a relationship with his adult father on television. It was nice to be able to share that with the country.
Sure. Definitely. I was just going to ask, you know, Dan, you know, like going back to Poppy, big thing is he's diehard Miami everything. Right, diehard Heat fan, diehard Dolphins fan. How did that sports fandom cultivate? Was it something that when he moved to Miami, he adopted everything, or did you kind of, you know, you're a big sports guy? Did you kind of grow up and kind of pull him into your world, or did he pull you into his world? Like, how did that come about?
The starting place on this is the simplest thing, right? And I imagine many people listening to this have a point like this somewhere in their childhood, like. One of the few things that I remember from my earliest childhood, one of my earliest memories, is being at the Orange Bowl, how big his hand was, how many people were there holding his hand. He got bad seats. Nobody wanted to go see the Buffalo Bills. He worked in a factory. He got the tickets nobody wanted. We packed the lunch, didn't have any money, and sat in the worst seats anywhere in sports. And it was the most magical place I had ever been. Like, I was, you know, it felt like freedom. It felt like something outside of our very small lives. And he wasn't a huge sports fan, but the connection point between me and my father was he was always working. I end up playing sports. I strike out. He comes to one of the games in a tie. I'm terrible at sports. And his, you know, he was very frustrated at how bad I was at everything. And my mom was like, look, I can handle everything else. But if you want this kid to be a man, you're going to have to handle that, because like, I'm not going to be able to teach him how to be a man. So you can be frustrated and embarrassed all you want, but if you want him to be better, you're going to have to help with that. And from then on, my father coached all my teams. Like, he was super hard on me. Like, I threw, you know, a no-hitter one time. I missed an all-star team one year by one vote, his as the coach, but he was the
How did that turn out when you found out that it was his vote that prevented you from being a fucking all-star?
It's a lifetime of suffering of never being good enough for my father, even when I give the asshole a television show and he steals it from me. And he
That's
steals it from
relationships
me.
Right there, in a nutshell, right? You know what I mean?
That's how it happened, too. I'm not lying about that. A lifetime of scars wrapped up in insecurities and vulnerabilities that I now conceal comedically on television because I was never good enough for my father.
That's good. You guys are doing a convincing job of concealing. Right.
Yeah. If you can cash out off a coping mechanism the way you have, that's a fucking win, bro. Yeah. Right?
You talked about not coming from much. You know, I know you worked super hard to get where you are, but your brand is very different because it's you. It's your friends. You know what I mean? Is there any point when you're wondering, like, how the fuck did I do this? You know what I mean?
Every day. Like, every day, I like, honest to God, I should crawl to work with gratitude. Like, again, my family, my parents didn't have freedom. They didn't. They fled a country where people are literally throwing their lives to the wind, dying in the ocean on vessels made of tires because they wanted to get away from an absence of freedom. And to come from that to being someone who only dreamed of being a sports writer, of just writing about sports, that would have been enough. Make a modest career that way, to be able to employ my friends, laugh with my friends, to have work be fun, to have work be a hobby. Like, I suppose we take everything for granted in some ways. Like, I don't know how many times people are thinking every day that they have hearing and how different their life would be if they did not have hearing. But I should crawl to work every day because, I mean, imagine, I don't know what you guys' frustrations are at work, but imagine if you got to fuck around with your friends every day and it just felt good. Like, it wasn't a suffering. And now more than ever, now I'm my own boss. Like, now get everybody out of the way, because now we're really going to fuck around because we don't have to answer to anybody anymore.
That was what I wanted to ask you about, Dan. And just for people who haven't followed, you know, your path out of ESPN and everything else that closely, you know, you've got John Skipper, who's, you know, a guy that I think a lot of people sort of thought of as Mr. ESPN. You guys have started Meadowlark, which seems like it's sort of the umbrella for everything you're talking about. The freedom, the new show, everything else. That's what you guys are kind of operating under. You got capitalized in a lovely way that was very public. I know you're not necessarily someone who personality wise wants to be out there with all that information. Has it been weird transitioning from kind of the counterculture guy at the suit institution to you're not the counterculture anymore? You're the face of something that's a big, legitimate, well-capitalized media company. What's that transition been like for you personally?
It is much, much, much easier to be anti-establishment from within the establishment, because you have an enemy and people notice it. And so we could use an enemy and the show will probably suffer from not having an enemy. What I would tell the audience, though, that is attracted to our authenticity is, when you ask that question first, the transition has been terrifying. That platform is safe. That platform is a destination. I'm not a CEO. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't know anything about how to get the kids of these kids who have grown up on my watch as producers for the show health insurance, because I'm learning all of that. And I don't use that side of my brain. Like, I can't handle my bank account. So, like, I want to focus over here and I'm building a company. So that's one of the scary parts. But the other thing that I just don't think people have noticed about what we're doing, when you say I'm the face of something, the specifics of what we just did here that to me are amazing, that I want people to see so they don't think it's me just cashing in on something, is DraftKings, as our first sponsor, not our only sponsor, giving us that amount of money with no traditional mainstream media to support the specifics of what we're doing. Think about it this way. They just gave us the equivalent of about $15 million a year over 3 years to rent us, which is more by a lot than Stephen A. Smith is being paid by ESPN as the biggest star that we know in this sport. But that money does not come to me. That money is poured into the business that we are now building. It's not me being like, woo, I'm getting all this money. I'm bathing in gold coins every night. It's it's pour it back into a business where everyone's going to get an equity on this thing, so that it's not just mine, so that it really is the family business. It's a media content company with a soul. So it has a creative spirit and everyone's got a proprietary interest in what it is we're building. And this shit's dangerous. You guys saw what happened with the Budden podcast. Like, this shit is dangerous. I can't
talk quite a bit about the Budden podcast.
Okay.
Every business, bro. But, you get in with the wrong motherfuckers. But, yes.
Think about this, though. So the pandemic starts. This is a crazy time to start a business. And Budden and our show are in similar circumstances, going into some sort of free agency. And all I see is like issues and problems and things I am scared of, because I do not want money coming between me and my friends. And everyone tells you, do not work with your family and friends. And so I had to go get a friend of mine who's a great white shark and then, like, build a business here, John. Like, please build a business here that has the soul that I want, but that can work and make the people feel fed and make them feel like they own it. And so this is what we built. So we go into free agency not knowing what we're going to get, right? And And then the offers are about like putting our fans behind a paywall, which would have been just rejected and they would have been angry about it. So how do we figure out the creative way to not put it behind a paywall and it becomes fuck it, we'll do it ourselves.
I love it.
I love fuck it. We'll
I love
it
fuck it and anything it's after the greatest, it. Right. Fuck it and then anything. I'm all in on that. You feel me?
I mean, Dan, do you truly believe you shouldn't get in business with your friends? Because, you know, I couldn't see myself potting with anybody who I'm not friends with. Like a lot of podcasts come about, hey, people on the internet are like, yo, this guy and this guy will be great together. And good for that model. But I couldn't see myself doing this shit with anybody but Mike and John, honestly.
It's interesting, though. I don't know what the relationship is with the crew on, or what it was with the Bud and crew, but I would say rock bands break up. It's easy to say that when you're starting, but inevitably, and well, maybe not inevitably, because it hasn't yet happened to us, but people fight over, am I getting mine? Like, am I getting the proper amount of credit when the success comes? Like it's why bands break up, and it's why creative environments, like at the end, John Stewart, as one example, his environment had become such that the last couple of years, he didn't like, there wasn't a connection point between him and other people. Letterman's environment had totally dried up. There'd be writers he didn't talk to for 2 years because Saturday Night Live writers rotate because nobody spends 15 and 20 years in these spaces with their friends cultivating it without the thing blowing apart, without people needing to go get their own thing. Like, so it's easier to say as you enter it, right? But if you're real friends, when you get to the button stuff, then you can navigate it. And furthermore, I need a lot of help to navigate it. Like, I do not want money coming between me and Stugatz. I don't want to be responsible for like what these people make. I need people who are less emotional than that to make business decisions on my behalf, because I'd give everybody everything. Fuck, we already have, basically. Like I've asked them, like, just give everybody everything so we can all share this.
Gotcha. But you know, building on what you said, I don't necessarily think it's guys wanting theirs. I think when you look at these situations where shit falls apart, it's people feeling that they weren't given their proper due. And I think if you're being transparent with your friends, if y'all are cutting the pie equal ways, I think that shit is avoidable, honestly.
I've been able to avoid it, but I'm scared of it, is what I would say. Like I think there are warning signs all over the place, and maybe it is avoidable if you are strictly vigilant and adherent to being aware that it's possible to threaten everything in your environment, because it's the most normal thing in the world, no matter how selfless you are, to wonder, on occasion, am I being properly valued in the way that I do the measurements? Because nobody cares about your issues the way you care about your issues.
I think there's an amount of money when you can just fuck me over, though. Like, Joe Budden made that amount of money. Like, if I'm making
absolutely
like 500K,
fuck me all the way over.
Whatever's above that, fuck me over. Or like 250, maybe even less, honestly, bro. Like, y'all can have all that. I'd rather have the friendship.
But if you made that for 15
bro,
years,
like, yeah,
you know what
like,
I mean? It's 500K. I think that's where it goes sideways, yeah, for some people. Is 500K to us sounds like 500K, but to Stephen A. Smith or Joe Budden or whatever, that doesn't sound like the same amount of money.
Yeah, I'd go another step on that, though. I'd go another step on that. Like, this thing has all been inverted. Like, you guys have crawled through so much shit to just get to where the microphones are, to get the chance that you have a profound gratitude because you've worked real jobs on, wait a minute, you're gonna give me legitimate money to do this? To do this?
With my
this, this ridiculous right. thing? Of yes, I'm gonna smoke dope and laugh with my friends and there's not gonna be drug testing over here? Like, like, yeah, right. And so you're like, you're gonna pay me $500,000 and I'm gonna come in here baked and do this show with my friend and nobody's gonna know that we're on gummies and I'm gonna be treated as a media professional?
Do whatever you want to do outside of that, bro. That's all that matters, you know what I mean? Like you said, we've had real jobs we fucking hated every day going into, so if I'm gonna be with my friends, but yeah, like you said, I mean, people want their propers, I guess, you know. But hey, man, I just want my homies, you feel me?
No, may you stay that grateful, because I'm telling you that I have, and it has served me in avoiding some of these landmines, because I think the people that I work with know that our company, Meadowlark Media, like everyone I'm talking to, and there's a line out the door of people who are like, get me in there. I want to figure out how to get in there. I'm trying to figure out, how do we make this your dream job so that you're having maximum fun with something that you're doing, so that you're doing your best work, and it's our job, or the business's job, to figure out how to monetize your best work, because you're a talented person that we think can do great work in this space.
And we can see it when you're talking on the pods that there's so much love there and respect between each other. You know what I mean? And that's your brand. You know what I mean? And that's important. So
I appreciate you guys noticing that, though, right? Because I don't like the stickiest of our fans. And I'd argue that in the history of this medium, I don't think, and when I say this medium, it's sports radio, so it's a low bar. I don't think that there has been an audience this fiercely loyal, because they see those specific things that the discerning see, and they're like, well, we get the show. We get what this is about. We get that this is just a loving space where people are enjoying each other's company. And I want to be a part of that too. I want to feel like these people are my friends too.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like you could point to, I'm not comparing you or your show to their show, but it feels more like a Howard Stern. You know what I mean? Like there's not really in sports that kind of an audience. You know what I mean? Like it feels like you have to go outside of sports to find a similar relationship. I totally agree with that.
I will tell you something that I have not told anybody, because I don't know the Howard Stern show, but a lot of people who understand the genius of the community that he created with rebellion and anti-establishment have said in our space that we're the closest thing that's existed, certainly in sports, to the ensemble ad-libbing comedy troupe that is, you know, funny to look in on because it's a show about a show and everybody's a little bit weird. We had a great offer to be like the sports heir apparent on Sirius Satellite Radio to Howard Stern. And we didn't want to put our fans behind a paywall. We didn't want to turn them into credit cards, and that is part of why it is that we chose, like, we almost had to choose that. It wouldn't have been a bad option. It would have been a great option. Like, that SiriusXM was really good to us, and it was super tempting, but this one is better because it has total freedom, and it allows it has total freedom for us, and it's literally free for our audience.
I think there's all of these little fights going on in media, as you talked about. Like, the paywall is such a big part of that, you know, for your old newspaper, for every sort of local outlet, like that figuring that out is going to be part of this next step. I think we've talked about a lot of smart stuff, including media, you know, future for media and shit. My question for you is, how much do you think we do or don't look alike, Dan? Because every time we post a video, we get at least 10 comments like, that's so cool that Levitard's hanging out with Tyler and John.
One, I'm sorry. Start there. Two, all you're getting there, and I feel like a lot of men in this country are getting this. I don't think many women are. I hope for their sake they aren't. It is everything about merely having a beard and having a fat face. If you combine those two things, okay, if you combine that, you look a little swollen, a little unhealthy, a little cartoonish, a little like spherical, like the fat is in perfect symmetry on your face in order to make it bulbous. There's not much, we're wearing the beard to hide our chins, and we
and the chipmunks.
The hair on our face looks like it's trying to get away from us. And behind that is just sort of an engorged pink swelling that feels unhealthy.
He fired your ass up by firing him up.
He ate that ass up.
That's the most delicate flame ever.
very thoughtful.
Pointing it at me, it's like shooting yourself in the chest and getting the person behind you.
Bro, like I've been saying, it's the hats too, man. Like, people don't know Dan. Dan is a hat guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people don't really know that, but Dan is a hat dude. Like that might be another
that
part
is just
of
my brother.
That might be another part of why Black. Yeah, I know you wear the Lebo thing, and your brother's an artist in Miami. So yes.
Well, that was one of the reasons. Like, if the backstory on us ending up at ESPN, and I mean it as no disparagement to ESPN that we never wanted to be there, but you guys knowing a little bit about what we do would understand why I would not like rules or corporate rules or any of that stuff. And I just wanted it to be a little Miami show, always to be a little Miami show, because I'm, you know, regionally proud, and this area was built by people like my exile parents. But what they said to me is, we will let your brother do the art on the show. We will let your father do it with you. I wanted something that could be more Miami than what I was already doing. And I didn't think there could be such a thing, but you put it on Ocean Drive, you give me those things, and you let me wear my brother's hats and look like a 52-year-old skateboarder, fat skateboarder, holding on, trying desperately to hold on to his youth against the threat of you people coming with your microphones. With your, and I didn't mean you people the way that you people. I better not get aggregated for you people. I meant just podcasters with microphones in general of indiscriminate race.
Brittany clip Dan saying you people.
Of indiscriminate race.
Hey, priest.
Oh, shit.
Appreciate you coming on, though, man. My buddy Mike Cardoso put me on. He's actually Cuban and lives in Miami, too, and he's a huge fan of yours, man, so. Ever since then, I've been a big fan of you, but I appreciate you coming on for sure.
Before we let Dan go, once again, hit YouTube, subscribe to Lebatard and Friends, the Freedom 24-hour live stream. We'll be going from noon Friday to noon Saturday. Go look at that lineup. We didn't plug all the people on the lineup, but it's everyone that you would want to see with the crew, Dan. First, before we get out of here, how excited are you for the live stream? How crazy is that going to be?
It is the most exciting day, I would say, that we have ever had doing this, because we have a connection with our audience that is unique. This is a challenge and a risk that is scary, but we also think that the audience will be along for the ride in the new media age of, you know, empowerment, that we're going to be able to, I'm a 52-year-old man who I believe we're going to be able to produce all sorts of things that go viral simply because we're a bunch of people who love each other, getting together and laughing about shit, and things going to go wrong, and who knows why it's going to gather a crowd, what the things are that create it. But we are doing something for the audience that is symbolically about freedom, about loving each other, about what you can do in creative spaces when you have a little bit of support and when you love the people around you. So for the discerning listeners that really like what we do for reasons that are authentic, I'm really excited to put in front of them what is basically 8 straight shows, right? It's 2 weeks worth of, we're doing three a week now. So it's 2.5 weeks of shows in one day with all, we've got the movie festival lineup, but we got calls out to Aaron Rodgers and Pat Riley, and, you know, all sorts of people are going to be coming through there, just sort of popping in. And hopefully it's a lot of fun for the audience. Thank you guys for bringing it up. And to the listeners, just, it's real easy. Lebatard and Friends and YouTube. Thank you guys for supporting the stuff that we do the way you do.
One more dumb question. What's the most important part of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? The peanut butter or the jelly?
Motherfucker.
I mean, it's got to be.
There we go, butter, right? Dan. I knew I loved
crunchy,
you.
crunchy peanut butter, no. Right? How can it be the jelly? What's the matter? First of all, as a
Tyler, make the argument.
I'll get his point off.
Well, but as a I'm disgusted with my fellow fat friend over here. Like, I'm just mortified by you choosing the sugar over the cream. But you've got to go with the crunchy peanut butter. Like, what's the matter?
What
with
would
you
be your reasoning here? Because I feel like people who say the peanut butter is like, oh, you need a lot more peanut butter than jelly to make a good peanut butter jelly. And I totally agree. But on the same stance, I feel like, you know, you need fucking 5 offensive linemen, but you need one quarterback. You need one quarterback who's that guy, and jelly is that guy in that scenario.
What tastes better to you, a jelly sandwich or a peanut butter sandwich?
I don't eat peanut butter sandwiches. Peanut butter sandwiches are disgusting, to be honest.
But I mean, you're talking about, you're singing the merits of Pippen when I got Jordan.
Peanut butter's not Jordan.
In this situation, it is. In a peanut butter. It's carrying, bro. It's the biscuit or the jelly more important.
No, it's more. You need more peanut butter than jelly to make a good peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
But you need more jelly than you need more biscuit than jelly too. Does that make jelly more important?
No. You need more peanut butter than jelly to make a good peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right?
Right, I'm
jelly
saying,
is the singular one here.
But MJ, I'm saying in a jelly biscuit, what's you need? There's more biscuit than jelly, but the biscuit is more important, bro.
How good would a peanut butter biscuit be?
You said what?
How good would a peanut butter biscuit be?
Bro, what would a peanut butter on fucking turkey leg be? We can do a whole bunch of
no,
shit.
No. You bringing up biscuits. Don't bring turkey legs up. How good would a peanut butter biscuit be?
First of all, peanut butter on a turkey leg would be delicious because peanut butter is always delicious. I could put it on my leg or dog feces, and it's peanut butter.
Let's not run from the biscuit, though. A peanut butter biscuit would be a fucking a manslaughter charge if you give that to somebody.
What's a jelly biscuit
is delicious.
What's a jelly sandwich?
Yeah, right. And I think peanut butter
sandwiches are disgusting killers, too. But a peanut butter sandwich you give to your kids. You know what I mean? Come on, bro.
Listen, bro.
I would consider, if you told me I could be someone who had peanut butter in my life at all times, but the only way I could have it is if I were a cannibal, I might think about eating you three with peanut butter because peanut butter is so important.
See, Levitar's body. He's one of the major peanut butter guy. I don't know if this really counts. He's a huge peanut butter dude, and we're just finding this out.
Everybody else has said peanut butter too. Literally everybody. But DeMarcus Cousins.
Not true.
DeMarcus Cousins. Who's a real one too?
We had Cuz, but come on. We started
y'all
out
are one and four out here.
Dan, the first answer was jelly. We've been getting dragged through the streets.
I love how crushed you are. Like you're disappointed in me. You're disappointed in yourselves. You're like, I thought jelly was good enough, but this guy, he's so fervent about it. He's a cannibal. I might want to be careful.
I can't believe you're that big of a peanut butter guy. I can understand being a peanut butter guy in a peanut butter and jelly sandwich debate, but being that big of a peanut butter solo guy, I'm a bit disappointed, Dan. Not gonna lie.
There is nothing surprising. Look at my face. There is nothing surprising about the fact that I love peanut butter. Nothing.
You got this way off fats and I got this way off sugars, okay? But we can all exist in one happy sandwich. Go subscribe to Levitard and Friends on YouTube. Check out Freedom all day, Friday through Saturday. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Keep fighting, guys. Keep fighting out here. Don't let anybody stop you and don't play by too many of the rules.
Love it.
All right, thanks so much to Dan for joining us. Just one of the most interesting dudes in sports, man, honestly. And I'm not someone who gives a fuck about like sports media generally, you know, but I'm always interested for his perspective on stuff. And I'm definitely fascinated to see where they go with that live stream tomorrow.
Yeah, and
very
and
weird, because very thoughtful, very fun, very Dan Levitard. Yes. You know what
And Dan doesn't necessarily give a fuck about sports media either. If you listen to a show like sports are cool to talk about, but he's down to go wherever the fucking discussion takes him. And that's what I love about him. I think that's what everyone loves about him.
100%. We appreciate him coming on the show. As I said, we will be back on Monday next week, breaking down NBA playoffs. So sorry you didn't get to hear us cry about the Lakers. I'm sure it'll all be over on Monday. You can hear us cry about it then. So,
boo. Bye.
Bye. Bye.